The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
On Memorial Day 2014, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. It's unusual for us to do a show early in the morning, but I've been up since 1:30, and Derek's up now, and so we may as well go for it.
Absolutely.
Before I fall asleep.
And before the meds kick in. In my case.
Oh.
No, actually,
I thought you said the Mets there for a second. I thought you're wearing a Cubs t-shirt.
I know.
Are the Mets kicking in the door or what?
No. They're struggling this year, which is always good to see. May 26th of 2014, Cubs are struggling too, but fantasy baseball team. Big victory for the Charleston Shoes last night.
Well done, honey. Well done. Yeah. I'm so glad that life inside your head is going really well.
And really, that's all that matters, isn't it?
You know, since I brought that up, I do want to discuss something with you that is relative to the news. And everybody knows about the Santa Barbara mass murder that took place a few days ago.
Right.
A gentleman named Elliot Roger, who has been disturbed his entire life.
Supreme gentleman, in his own words.
Well,
that's what he called himself.
He did. There's a video that may still be online if you want to watch it. But
disturbing.
You know, it's extremely disturbing. And yesterday I made about halfway through his manifesto, where he essentially details nearly every day of his life.
Yeah.
It's a long document and very disturbing and extremely narcissistic.
Oh, yeah.
But the reason I want to bring this up with you is not just to discuss current events, but to get your opinion, because this is a young man who over and over talks about how he was small in stature, bullied at school, and extremely bright. Now, you're about 6 feet tall now, but when you were younger, you did a lot of growing in high school. So you were smaller compared to some of your friends, weren't you?
It depended.
But you got picked on a lot.
Well, in high school, especially, even in grade school, I was not especially small in, say, junior high. I had about a growth spurt. So say sixth, seventh grade, especially, I was about the same size. I was just, not a fighter.
This young man refers to himself as not athletically inclined at all. But you play baseball and things like that.
Softball.
Yeah. But I mean, you were more of a thinker.
Yeah.
And you wore glasses.
Yeah, and, had flat feet, had to wear orthopedic shoes for a number of years when I was a kid, which, when all the other
Doesn't
kids are wearing sneakers,
yeah.
No, all the other kids are wearing, the Chuck Taylors or whatever, Keds. And here I was wearing wingtips because those were the only style that the orthopedic shoes were made in back in the day. So, no, there were some things that were a little different. And, being more of a thinker than an athlete. Yeah, I enjoyed playing, baseball out in the playground and basketball and stuff. But I was not an athlete. I was kind of a chunky kid, I had to get the clothes in the Husky section at Sears. It wasn't until really...
Sam says you should have bought them in the Dachshund section.
That would have been great. But then getting to high school and then moving from Chicago to a smaller community near the Wisconsin border, freshman year of high school, when, yes, I was I was about 5 feet tall as a freshman, and it really was junior year that I began to sprout. So I can relate somewhat to that. But even at that, there were other guys that I was friends with. And to some extent, we could offer each other protection. And, sophomore, junior year, I became friends with a group of guys that we hung out together. We were a little more, I don't want to say intelligent because I don't think that's the right word, just more introspective, geeks. More thoughtful geeks. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And I had friends in the chorus and swing choir and was involved in the debate team, had friends there. So I had friends. It's just that, the in crowd, it didn't like me.
That's my point. It's the way you handled that. The in crowd didn't quote unquote like you. This kid didn't fit in with the in crowd either, but he had a circle of friends and they tended to be geeks. Mm-hmm. People who preferred to play video games and maybe ride on their, not scooters, but skateboards. That was sort of the only athletic event that he participated in.
Yeah.
He was very much into World of Warcraft, into Halo. He loved online gaming. That's where he found his affirmation. But to go from, I've got a small circle of friends that I feel comfortable around, to because I'm not accepted by the jocks and
cheerleaders.
And the cheerleaders, which honestly, a lot of, intelligent, geeky young guys aren't accepted by the jocks and the cheerleaders.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't this affluently affected young man from divorced parents, decided, I'm just going to kill them all.
Yeah.
I mean, he was 22 when he wrote this manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
So he's looking back and every moment of his life, he repeats how he is living in an unfair world.
From what I saw on the video, and I've excerpted some clips from the video. Actually, I basically put them together in about a three minute edited version of the video that was allegedly or reportedly recorded the night before he went out and shot and also stabbed several victims.
Yes. Yes, he killed three men.
Right.
Two were his roommates and another may have just been staying over.
Right. So the sense that I got was that this kid was never given any boundaries by his parents after the divorce. And you picked up on this from his written manifesto as well, that mommy coddled him, didn't say no, kept He wrote repeatedly in his manifesto about how his mother would give him, candy and always,
indulge his every whim,
right,
if she could afford it.
Right. And clearly they could afford quite a bit because the kid was driving a relatively new black BMW.
Well, he complains liberally in his manifesto about how because his dad at some points had a better career than others. His dad is in directing. There were times when his efforts made a lot of money, and other times when he invested poorly. He did a documentary called I think it was called Oh God or something like that. It was a documentary asking people what they thought about God, and it flopped. It didn't have that many venues that wanted to show it, and what few did, it didn't do well, so people didn't want to see it, and he'd invested nearly every dime he had in it, and he lost a lot of money, and in this lengthy PDF that this young man wrote, he bemoans the fact that his father made these bad choices, and not saying, it was really hard on my dad. No, it was hard on me because dad did these things to me. All of this centers around me.
That's it, yes.
And he kept talking, even referring to events in his high school years, that when friends came over, it was a play date.
I'm sorry, when you're 22 years old, the words play and date don't appear unless you're talking about your own child. Who's under the age of
exactly,
two.
Exactly, exactly. I think of play dates as being kindergarten age and younger. No, when you get to be first grade, you're no longer play dates.
Yeah, and in this kid's case, he was still, seventh, eighth grade, and he was referring to play dates?
Oh, high school.
High school.
Yeah, he was still talking about play dates when he was in high school.
No.
And when he got into junior high, he decided that because they don't like me anyway, I'm going to act as bizarrely as possible and make them all mad. I'll fight with them. I'll wear weird hair. And that made him even less popular.
He sounds as though he's been infantilized. And
yes,
a part of this may be the result of being spoiled and coddled by his mother, especially.
Enough, his stepmother did not coddle him and he hated her.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a natural reaction for kids. I mean, any child does not like to have boundaries set.
Sure.
But if you grow up understanding that in the famous words of the Rolling Stones, you can't always get what you want. Or in the fans of the Cubs fans.
Oh, there's always, next year.
Yeah. You know, you learn to take a longer view and you understand that, hey, look, I'm not always going to win. And you learn to accept that sometimes life deals you a bad hand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you play the hand you're dealt. And this kid's response was to not play the hand he was dealt, which actually, if he'd played his cards, come on. There are a lot of people out there who would love to have had the advantages this kid had. He
absolutely
came from money. He's living
he
in a wonderful
area. He was attractive. I can't understand what it was.
Oh, and what's really bizarre is that there, I followed a link last night. There were already posts out there. Maybe Drudge's link to this. Maybe that's where I saw it. Tweets showing up from people around the country saying, gee, why is it always the cute ones who go crazy? You know, hashtag, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But you're right. He was a good looking young man. Come on, you got money, you got a black BMW. This kid had some deeper issues, and that's what I got to. That's what I wanted to touch on with this clip of audio. Okay, to go ahead and play this.
You go right ahead.
It's about 3 minutes long. Listen to this, and listen to these words, and especially listen to some of the things that the way he categorizes, the way he views other people. Because in my view, he is looking upon other people not as fellow humans. This kid is clearly devoid of empathy.
Hi, Elliot Roger here. Well, this is my last video. It all has to come to this. Tomorrow is the day of retribution. The day in which I will have my revenge against humanity. Against all of you. I'll take great pleasure in slaughtering all of you. You will finally see that I am, in truth, the superior one, the true alpha male. Well, now I will be a god compared to you. You will all be animals. You are animals, and I will slaughter you like animals. I'll be a god, exacting my retribution on all those who deserve it. And you do deserve it, just for the crime of living a better life than me. All you popular kids, you've never accepted me. And now you'll all pay for it. And girls, all I've ever wanted was to love you and to be loved by you. I've wanted a girlfriend. I've wanted sex. I've wanted love, affection, adoration. You think I'm unworthy of it. That's a crime that can never be forgiven. If I can't have you, girls, I will destroy you. You denied me a happy life. And in turn, I will deny all of you life. It's only fair. I hate all of you. Humanity is a disgusting, wretched, depraved species. If I had it in my power, I would stop at nothing to reduce every single one of you to mountains of skulls and rivers of blood. And rightfully so. You deserve to be annihilated. And I'll give that to you.
Yeah, Elliot Roger, that was pulled from the video that was linked at the Daily Mail's website. I believe it was at LiveLeak, but just some of the phrases there. And I read the transcript first and thought, you know what, this sounds like this could come from the mouth of a demon or a fallen angel, referring to humanity in general.
Yeah,
I will take my revenge against humanity. You'll see, I am the superior one. I will be a god. You are animals. I will slaughter you like animals. And then he's talking about women. All I wanted was adoration. As in the sons of God saw the daughters of men, they were fair and took wives of all they chose. Maybe I'm stretching this a little far, but I don't know. Clearly, this kid had sold out to the enemy. And his reference to humanity being a disgusting, depraved species. And then the reference to, you know, mountains of skulls and rivers of blood. Now, again, this kid may be influenced by the Hollywood world in which he was raised. His father, as Sharon mentioned, unit director on the Hunger Games, the recent film. But it just struck me that these words could very well have been coming from whatever foul spirit held this kid in its thrall.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it struck me as I was watching the video. But he keeps talking about how he is a 22-year-old virgin who's gone to college and he's superior to everybody else. I'm not so convinced that he was a virgin when he died. He did commit suicide, according mm-hmm. to the reports. And that was after running down a young man with his car, mm-hmm. you know, not satisfied with knifing his roommates and a third gentleman and then, you know, shooting co-eds. Mm-hmm. He ran down and didn't kill him, but he's broken both the young man's legs.
Hit a guy on a bicycle who was flipped up into the windshield of his BMW so hard that the windshield is smashed in.
And then he killed himself, is what we're told. If he had that much money and he had that desire to lose his virginity, you can buy that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that expensive.
No. So the point being that this is a convenient excuse in the kid's mind. You know, if that was really what set him off, there were ways around that, but he didn't know.
Yeah. In the manifesto, and I know that that's not really what he called it. I think that's what the press is calling it, but I'll call it that for now. He talks about how he first saw a pornographic video of the sex act mm-hmm. in a cyber cafe, and he was probably fifth or sixth grade, I think, maybe a little bit older than that, but he was maybe 11, 12 years old. And he, in his memoirs, he says that he had never imagined that it would be like that. He had no idea that that's what happened. I find that also hard to believe because in our current school system, this young man was born in 1991. In our current school system, by the time you are that old, you have had at least one, if not many, courses in sex ed.
Especially in California.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, not likely. A couple of other interesting data points to consider. John Rappaport, investigative reporter who I had on a couple of months ago to discuss pharmakia, basically. Mm-hmm. Don't agree with everything John Rappaport writes. He's kind of new agey, but he does connect some interesting dots. And he had a piece that he published over the weekend, in fact, Sunday, the 25th, which he prefaces with the note that these are preliminary notes based on the early media accounts of the killing spree. He pointed out something that I think you and I figured right away, that we should watch this week as lawmakers return from the Memorial Day weekend for a call for more gun control.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in fact, we even saw that beginning in the press conference, the father of one of the young
one
people
of the victims,
killed,
yes.
one of the victims, blaming the National Rifle Association for this event. But again, we point out that half of those who were killed were knifed, not shot. So,
right. So, as you said, the National Knife Association,
They're responsible for this. But the other thing that Rappaport points out that I think is really worth watching is that there may be not only a call for more gun control, but a call for more invasive psychiatric screening and treatment.
Yep. Already seeing that meme coming out that this was a young man who was very disturbed. Parents heard of Rampage as they raced through area, call for, what is it? Oh, he's being referred to as the severely mentally disturbed gunman.
Right.
And yes, you're right. I think John Rappaport is right. This is going to require that with Obamacare, that at the very least, those enrolled mm-hmm. will be required to have school checkups with school counselors or even visiting professionals to make sure that these young people are being steered correctly, that they are diagnosed at a very young age and chemically altered, chemically restrained.
Yeah. Rappaport points out that on page 112 of Roger's manifesto, he mentions meeting with his psychiatrist who gave him a prescription for an antipsychotic called risperidone, which after researching it online, Roger claims he opted not to take. But and Rappaport has made this case and or made this point in other rampage incidents like this, other spree killings, that the media never seems to ask, okay, what drugs was the kid on?
Mm-hmm.
And then he points to a website, which I'll link to in the show notes, called SSRI Stories, which is a collection of accounts of violent incidents involving people who were on SSRIs, like antidepressants, Paxil, Zoloft, Prozac, and so forth, which can sometimes apparently push people over the edge.
Yeah.
Why? Is it just a chemical imbalance, or is it somehow opening the mind to external influences that want to see mountains of skulls and rivers of blood? The other point that Rappaport makes, and this is a curiosity. Remember a few years ago, the movie that Jim Carrey did to try to step away from
the number 23?
The number 23, right. Rappaport mentions, reminds us that about 13 years ago, another young man, a guy named David Attias, in 2001, took a, drove his car into a crowd of people in Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
He was also a student at Cal Santa Barbara. And four people were killed. This young man was a freshman at UC Santa Barbara. And after running over, crushing, killing four people, got out of the car and said, reportedly, "I am the angel of death." That incident occurred on February 23rd of 2001. The official release date of the first Hunger Games film in the U.S., again, which Elliot Rodgers' father was unit director on, was March 23rd of 2012. Elliot Rodgers' rampage in Santa Barbara, May 23rd, 2014. Coincidence? Perhaps. Anyway.
Disturbing.
Indeed.
Well, today, let's just left turn, get away from that. Today is Memorial Day.
Yes.
It's the day that we remember our fallen soldiers,
mm-hmm.
both male and female, fathers who died, brothers who died, sons who died, and women, mothers, daughters, wives. Many have lost their lives in defense of what we call democracy,
mm-hmm.
what we call our constitutional freedoms. And I just want to say a thank you to everyone out there who has lost a loved one during military service.
Yeah. There are those who will say, you know, there's no good that comes from honoring those fallen in a the military adventures that the United States and other governments perpetuate around the world, because it will only encourage the continuance of those type of adventures. And
mm-hmm.
But we're not going to go there. I suppose you can make that point. But the fact is, I would suggest that most who have died in service, especially since the volunteer army, I mean, the United States military became a volunteer army, I think most who join the service are doing so for good reasons, if not patriotism and a belief in the right of people to determine their own fates, to self-govern, perhaps as a way to better themselves, to learn discipline, and perhaps to pay for education, whatever. But, you know, if they've been placed in harm's way in the service of the nation, they deserve that respect, and especially if they've fallen in that capacity. They deserve to be remembered.
Yep. Amen to that.
So.
Well, speaking of the military service, I want to tell you about a story that I just posted to our new website.
Ah, yes. I kind of hinted at this on View from the Bunker last night, but have not mentioned it.
We're going to actually announce the website address to you and link to it in the show notes in mm-hmm. case you need that. It's called riseofthecybergods.com, and it is the site for The book that Derek and I are writing right now that we hope will be released next year under Defender Publishing, mm-hmm. or one of his imprints. Tom Horn has talked to us and wanted us to write a book based on the talks that we gave in Florida, in Orlando, and the talks that we will be continuing, probably updated and maybe a different angle on the topic in mm-hmm. Pikes Peak
yeah.
in July. The story that I posted there this morning, and I'm trying to at least once a day put something in there that relates to transhumanism and the rise of sentient machines. This one's about the military beefing up soldiers with an Iron Man-like suit.
Ah.
And interestingly enough, the suit is called Talos. That's an acronym that stands for Tactical Assault Light Operator Suit.
Yeah.
TALOS.
We needed to come up with something that matched the name that we wanted to give it.
Yes, because I'm thinking, okay, I know how these things work. Talos, it turns out, is the name of a giant man of bronze
mm-hmm.
who was said to have been ordered by Zeus, he told Hephaestus, to create this man of bronze to protect his consort Europa from pirates and invaders so that she would not be kidnapped because she was very valuable.
Mm.
This is Europa, who was tempted by Zeus in the form of a bull.
Right, right.
And he impregnated her, and she gave birth to...
Ow.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't sound like fun. Other legends say it was Daedalus, not Hephaestus, but someone created Talos, and he is also depicted in an image that I found at Wikipedia. So it is under the Wikipedia Commons license, and so I put it at our website.
Yeah.
It's an image of him on a coin, and he looks for all the world like a fallen angel.
Kind of does,
doesn't
he?
He's got wings, doesn't
yeah.
he? But he's also sometimes depicted as a bull.
Mm-hmm.
So was he a bull? Was he a centaur? Not a centaur, but what's the term for a bull man?
Minotaur.
Minotaur, thank you very much. So I don't know, but he is well known in Greek mythology. So Talos.
I'm looking. Who are the sons of...
Sons of Zeus?
Sons of Zeus by Europa. Because as I recall, she had more than one by Europa.
At least twins.
Oh, this
they
is
almost always had twins.
I didn't realize this. In Phoenician territories, Sidon.
Uh-huh.
The temple of Astarte, or Asherah,
was
sacred to Europa.
Oh, that's right.
Hmm. Let's see. Europa was said to be the daughter of Agenor, the Phoenician king of Tyre.
Oh, that's really interesting, too.
And let's see. Abduction.
Let's see. The moon of Jupiter. Oh, and you know that Europa is, of course, a moon of Jupiter. Jupiter is another name for Zeus. It's really interesting because this is actually connected, people, that we have a meme in the media now that our space program is going to go to Europa,
mm-hmm.
of all places. If you have not watched 2010, Arthur C. Clarke's sequel to 2001,
and seen
that we were told, don't go to Europa.
Yes, attempt no landings there.
You're crazy.
Europa had three sons fathered by Zeus, Minos, Rhadamanthus, and Sarpedon, the three of whom became the three judges of the underworld when they died.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, interesting that Europa is this kind of meme that keeps bubbling under. I mean, again, we've not made it as far as Mars yet. Maybe we should, you know, tackle Mars before we go to, Europa. But no, yeah. There is funding in the NASA budget for a Europa mission.
And relative to the Rise of the Cyber Gods website,
yes.
The movie, 2001 and 2010, both featured a character named Hal, mm-hmm. who was a sentient computer.
Who turned evil.
Well, he explained later on he wasn't being evil. He was just, you know, following his secret orders. Sort of like the sentient cyborg aboard the ship in Alien.
Mm. Bishop.
No, not Bishop. It was the first one.
Oh, right. Right. The one played
Bishop
by...
Bishop was the good one.
Yes. It was played by... Oh, gosh, the guy who played Bilbo in the Lord of the Rings films.
I'm not thinking of it, but I will hear in a minute.
Not Denholm Elliott. That Ian? Was Ian. No, not Ian.
Anyway.
Well, we'll look it up.
So they're sitting out there shouting the name at us. You idiots!
How could you forget?
Bilbo!
Brain full.
Yeah. We haven't had breakfast yet.
Well, got coffee.
All I've had is coffee.
Yeah.
I did bake a loaf of bread this morning, though. And it's cooling on the counter, ready for slicing.
Excellent.
And toast.
Yeah. We get the wheat sent to us. And interestingly enough, the company that makes that stuff's got a visitor center. Right down the road from us in good old Effingham, Illinois. Mm-hmm.
So it's 9-grain bread, good for us, and good GMO wheat. Oh, wait a minute. Silly me. Yeah. There's no GMO wheat in this country.
Yeah. Well, the situation in Ukraine continues to
speaking of Europa.
As long as we're on that continent, continues to bubble away. The elections there over the weekend have elevated the candidate supported by the West, surprisingly enough, to the
Poroshenko, was that his name?
Right. He's the fellow that Petros Poroshenko. Yeah.
Piotros. Peter.
Yeah. He's the fellow who is the chocolate baron.
Yeah, Russian chocolate, I think, is the name of his company.
That's how he made his
money. The one that was banned in Russia for a while.
Right. Right. So, again, this is all a proxy battle taking place between the West and and Russia over Ukraine, and the people in Ukraine are the ones who are basically paying the price for it. They are the ones who are kind of caught in the middle. And it's one of those things that is just a little bit frustrating when you try to balance your natural patriotism, which many of us conservative American Christians are. We are kind of raised and inculcated with this idea that America is a force for good in the world. And there have been times, I suppose, when that's been true. But the difficulty is in when you begin to read the real history of the world and understand that it's not always the way it's presented to us, and that very often our adventures in other parts of the world are not motivated by a desire to do good for other people, but instead to grab more market share, exclude other nations from their share of the pie. The whole situation regarding our adventures in Iraq, for example, and Afghanistan regarding pipeline rights for, was it Unocal?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah. I'd forgotten about Unocal.
Yeah.
And that's not a diet plan.
No. We have plenty of hydrocarbon resources here in the United States. Between the Gulf of Mexico, between the shale formations in western North Dakota and the Illinois Basin, which is basically the southern two-thirds of Illinois, a good chunk of southwest Indiana, and northwest Kentucky, and the North Slope of Alaska, we really have enough oil and natural gas here for our own purposes without dependence on the Middle East or the stuff coming out of Central Asia around the Caspian Sea. And yet we continue to foment political disruption in those areas, not because we need the resources there, but because we just don't want the other guys to have those resources. And when you start balancing that against your inner long held belief, those beliefs in which you were raised that the United States, we're the good guys.
Yeah.
You know, cognitive dissonance sets in, and it's not a very pleasant place to be. But as Christians, we have to remember that, look, our first loyalty is to the kingdom of God. I mean, that's our citizenship, really.
Yeah.
We're to be good citizens. We're not to withdraw from politics. I mean, that's a sure way to let the enemy have the field, but we don't depend on politics for our ultimate salvation. We understand we're in a fallen world, and all you need to, you know, verify that is to check your daily news feed. But that's not ultimately where we're going to spend the rest of our lives.
No.
The rest of our lives, all of us are going to live forever.
Yes. Yeah. You know, the interesting transhumanists, and I appreciate this about them. that they have a desire to live forever. They love life. And I really respect that.
Mm-hmm.
But the irony is that we are all going to live forever.
That's
we
it.
Are eternal beings. And it's just a choice of where you live it out.
Exactly right. And that was sort of my way of segueing into the whole transhumanist thing.
Before we leave and we go into transhumanism, I want to stay with the Black Sea region for just a minute, because a document that I discovered this morning and started reading from 2006 that I think is sort of required reading for anybody who really wants to understand what's taking place in Ukraine and Georgia and Azerbaijan, that whole area to the east of the Black Sea region.
Mm-hmm.
There is a document from the German Marshall Fund.
Think tank.
A think tank that was established in 1972 with money from Germany for the commemoration of the 25th anniversary of the Marshall Plan, which is why it's called the German Marshall Fund.
Mm-hmm.
This document is, we'll link to this, it's called Next Steps in Forging a Euro-Atlantic Strategy for the Wider Black Sea.
Uh-huh.
And it's all about taking charge of the entire region, and that includes to the east of the Black Sea.
Yeah.
Because it's not only important to that it belong to Europe, but it also needs
Europa.
To be, exactly, mm-hmm. it's a Europa-Atlantic pathway. I
the new
saw
Atlantis.
That in it. Yes! Thank yeah. you very much. And it is the new important world order, and it includes the Black Sea. And this is one of, and at the time that this was written in 2006, Russia is listed as a partner.
But they've been kicked out since then because
they
of the whole
have
thing.
Been.
Over. Yeah,
yes, they have.
They haven't played ball.
That's right.
Well,
and they're not eating any candy.
No,
either.
Yeah, because the east side of the Black Sea is mostly Russia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some Georgia there. Georgia.
It's also it included in this document. It says that the Black Sea is an important region because it essentially leads into the Middle East.
It does. Turkey is basically the southern border of the Black
right.
Sea. So you'd have
right.
the Turks on the south. To the east and the southeast, you've got Georgia, Armenia, and Azerbaijan. The other interesting thing about this is that if you've got... if you control the east side, that area between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, which includes Georgia, and then those disputed regions where Georgia provoked
South Ossetia
and Abkhazia, where they provoked a war with Russia a few years back. Although if you listen to most American news outlets, conservative news outlets, it was Putin who started the war. Well, he wasn't even president then. But
exactly. No, but he really was. He was prime minister, and that's all that matters.
But again, if you go back and read accounts from the day, Georgia provoked that war. But it would mean a secured land route for natural gas coming from the Caspian Sea basin direct to Europe, could perhaps bypass Russia. So there's some perhaps other...
Well, energy independence is one of the reasons that they want to control that entire region, because Gazprom right now sort of controls people through energy.
They do. And, we should probably mention that... Gazprom and the Chinese National Oil Company.
Ah, yes.
Just signed a deal. It's a long-term agreement to supply natural gas to China. About a 30-year deal worth $400 billion. According to an analyst at Bloomberg, said the deal was a coup for Putin, who showed he can build ties with Asia's leading economy at a time when the crisis in Ukraine is souring relations with the U.S. and Europe. It's probably a lower return on the gas. I mean, when you sign a big deal,
mm-hmm.
you obviously have to give the customer a lower price in order to, but if he's secured 30 years a deal for the Chinese, and it's important for the Chinese because that's a potential bottleneck for their growing economy
mm-hmm.
is energy supplies.
Right.
If they secure a good energy supply, then
we're going to get cheaper electronics, and we'll also get cheaper stuff at Walmart.
Yeah.
So it's a coup for us.
Well, and Putin is probably thinking, too, if we get the Chinese dependent on natural gas, they can also then have that lever to play.
Oh, yeah.
In future political deals with the Chinese. So.
Because they have a long history of Russia and China, communist
tension.
Russia.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they've been partners, but not happy partners. Mm-hmm.
I've got to imagine that the Japanese are not very comfortable with this whole thing.
No, probably not.
Because, it was 100 years ago, which is still not that long ago. It's within living memory of, maybe not, but just on the edge of living memory, maybe of a few people yet. But the Russians and the Japanese fought a war prior to World War I.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not necessarily, and they still kind of argue over ownership of, is it Sakhalin Island? Or maybe the island just to the north of Sakhalin. I forget which.
I think it's in the North China Sea. I can't remember which one of those.
But anyway, as long as we're in Europe, we might as well stick there just a little bit longer. This weekend, elections were taking place all across Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And I've not checked the results, but last night as I was going to bed, it appeared that the right-wing parties across Europe were really coming on strong, like Marine Le Pen's National Front in France.
Yeah. And
Nigel Farage, who... If nothing else, he's great for quotes. I wish I had some audio of Nigel Farage, but he's very well spoken, and he is brilliant with a quick and cutting remark. Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak on their No Agenda program will often have audio from Nigel Farage, and he is just so good at just cutting the Eurocentrists right to the core. So his UK Independence Party was doing very well in the elections yesterday, too, which is an interesting development because the Eurocentrists who want to, basically control everything from Brussels are kind of taking it in the shorts. It's always kind of great to see. But in fact, there's a website that we've been looking at a little bit, probably need to draw on this more often on a daily basis. It's sort of a web bot. Except that it really doesn't predict the future. What it does is it analyzes news. So it's kind of looking 24 hours into the past.
Mm-hmm.
Analyzes news stories based on location, names mentioned, and whether the references are positive and negative. And you get a database each day of nations and national leaders or political leaders and how they're being referred to in news coverage, which kind of helps get an idea of whether they're trending up, who's hot and who's not.
Mm-hmm.
And Brussels, Belgium, is leading the conflict list for the day. It's like the Euroskeptics are rising in the EU, and the leaders in Brussels don't like it one bit. Who are these uppity people thinking they can self-determine, the right of self-determination?
Well, exactly. There are a number of countries that are tired of being told what to do by those, muckety-mucks, and so they want... It's amazing. The nationalism streak that we are seeing going through many of these countries. One of the chants that the rebels in Ukraine were saying over and over was Ukraine for Ukrainians.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, all you people who've immigrated here, get out.
Yeah. And the fact that, which isn't really talked about in American media, that's one of the things of what do they call it, Maiden or
Maiden? Well, I don't
Maiden
know.
Or
I'm
Maiden
not,
or what?
Maidan. I'm
right.
Not sure how it's pronounced.
Which
I
is
think it means square, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's essentially a neo-Nazi group.
Yes, that's how it started out. Now they've redone their logo, which was very much like the old swastika.
Right.
They've redone it. They've sort of, retrofitted everybody. And no, we're really not. We're just nationalists.
Western-funded NGOs basically came in and gave
Nazis
them some...
Nazis stood for nationalists.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where the term came
National
from.
National Socialist. Yeah.
Exactly.
So they got some guidance on marketing and branding from mm-hmm. Western NGOs. Hey, you might want to lose that swastika that really doesn't...
And that little mustache.
No, get rid of the little mustache. This was an interesting point that I saw in some articles about a week ago. When you look at who the United States has been backing and the West has been backing in some of the recent conflicts in Syria, with the support we've been giving to the rebels there, and the fact that it's pretty well an open secret that many of them are aligned with or just outright Al-Qaeda, Muslim Brotherhood. And then you've got the neo-Nazi, which, of course, is an offshoot of the, an outgrowth of the Nazi party and the influence that the Nazis had in the Middle East during and after World War II. And the fact that we're supporting the neo-Nazis in Ukraine is like, we've completely flipped sides. We've flipped sides.
You know, those Nazis that came over in Paperclip.
They are Nazis.
Totally changed. They left that whole, you know, idea that no, we don't have to support that ideology anymore. We're totally American now.
Yeah.
Americanish.
And somewhere in a bunker is Dr. Strangelove.
You built the doomsday device and you didn't tell anyone?
He's our Nazi. He's okay. So, but again, and that gets back to the way we American Christians were raised and why it's so hard for us to take a look at our nation this way, because we're taught from very young, God bless America. God has blessed America. Well, he has, but there are elements within the government of the United States that are worshiping a different God.
Right.
And we should not follow them in that worship.
No. It's very disturbing for me. I was raised in a church where, I've said this before, raised in a church where the American flag, the Christian flag, and the Bible were all up front.
Yeah.
Around the altar. The Bible was on the altar, the flags to the sides, and Jesus' picture in the middle, as if somehow this is all interconnected. It's right. All the same thing.
Yeah. So we've gone from, God and country to, like, one word, God and country.
Yeah.
Meaning it's all conflated.
Yeah.
And as Christians, that's a difficult thing, but we need to separate ourselves from that. And I don't know how it is in other nations, not having the experience of living anywhere else outside the U.S. And generally, most of my life has been spent in fairly conservative part of the Midwest, the Midwest.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is something that Christians in other nations experience, if their nationalist tendencies or patriotic tendencies tend to interfere with faith in Jesus Christ. But I would wager that that's a problem for a lot of folks in the United States, and that we would have a real hue and cry in a lot of our churches if we tried to remove the American flag.
Yes.
From the sanctuary.
Oh, yes. I mean, if you took the patriotic hymns out of the hymnal, you'd take out about, 10% of the hymnal probably.
Yeah, yeah. I know one of the biggest responses we got at a concert, you know, the singing group that I'm a part of, a couple of years ago, was when we sang the Battle Hymn of the Republic with a much larger group from Bloomington, Illinois. Wonderful piece of music, very stirring, really gets the blood moving. But when you look at the lyrics, the Battle Hymn of the Republic, is that really something Christian? Well, anyway, I don't want to go. That's a sorry.
Well, it's describing Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
He's trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored.
Yeah.
That's a picture that we get later in the book of Revelation, where the angel comes down and Jesus, what appears to be Jesus, is on the cloud and he reaps. And then right after that, this other angel, an angel comes in and he reaps and he gathers all these grapes and throws them into God's winepress of his judgment.
Hmm. You know, I've never really done a deep study of those lyrics, and
it's chilling, isn't it?
The second verse too. In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea.
Yeah.
With a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me.
Yeah, yeah.
As he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Christ said it is finished, and it was, and it is.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to add anything to that. Now, I do, as we said earlier, I appreciate that we live in a fallen world where nations battle against nations.
Right.
And in order to protect the lives of our children, sometimes men and women have to go to war. I understand that. What I get upset about is when politicians choose to sacrifice these wonderful men and women who volunteer their life blood. The politicians just think nothing of those sacrifices, and it's just a number, just a statistic to them.
Yeah.
Sometimes, okay, well, let's just put them in the theater. And well, we talked recently about, you and I, about the battle of, the Australian group that...
Gallipoli. Yeah.
And how that was, they knew that those guys would die.
Yeah.
And yet they told him to take that hill.
I was, I mentioned this before. I listened to a podcast by a fellow named Dan Carlin, Carlin. If you like history, recommend it. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, and he takes on some really interesting topics. He did Rome for a bit, and he did the Vikings, and now he's doing a series he calls Road to Armageddon, which is about World War I. And see him the second program in, and he's basically gotten as far as 1915. We Americans tend to think that World War I began when our doughboys headed over there at the end of 17 and early 18.
Right.
But millions had died in 1914 and 1915. And he spent some time describing what took place at Gallipoli, which was intended by Winston Churchill, who designed the plan to force the opening at the Dardanelles, which is basically where the Black Sea enters in the Mediterranean. There were a number of old ships in the British Navy that he thought would be good for this operation. The Turks controlled both sides of the straits there, and because technology was advancing so rapidly at the at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, that these warships the Brits had built in like 1905 were already obsolete. But he thought, okay, look, we can force the straits, get into the Black Sea, and we can relieve the Russians. Excuse my voice, I'm fighting a cold. And the whole idea was to just rush through the straits as quickly as possible under the guns of the Turks and get into the Black Sea and then force the Turks to, you know, pull back, which again would open up Russia's access to the Mediterranean and allow the Brits to and the Allies to relieve the Russians. But the plan went weird from the start. The admirals were trying to preserve the ships, whereas Churchill's plan was, hey, we're using these old ships because they're expendable.
Right.
Well, yeah, but there are also men on those ships.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyways, they tried to run the straits. They ran into mines and lost a couple of battleships. French lost one. The Brits lost a couple. And suddenly the admirals decided to pull back. And, you know, Churchill was figuratively tearing out his hair. So then they decided, okay, we're going to land instead. And we'll put troops ashore. The whole idea for doing this was so they wouldn't have to expend soldiers to take these defended high points. And things got so messed up. And the Australians wound up landing in what was essentially an inverted amphitheater, a little cove where they were exposed and the Turks were up on the hills on the high ground. And yeah, basically because they didn't have radios back in the day. Mm-hmm. So communications
they
with
just
troops,
had runners.
Yeah. Was a mess. And there's a movie called Gallipoli that addresses this. The Australians were basically, through a variety of errors, told to charge an entrenched position, running right into entrenched machine guns, which was a slaughter. Tragic, because almost an entire generation of European youth was wiped out. Almost an entire generation, Australian, New Zealand, Canadian, Americans got into the tail end. We were just sort of piling on by that point. Which some will argue that was Woodrow Wilson's way of getting into and having a controlling influence over the developing or the League of Nations that he wanted to develop, which was a first attempt at a one world government.
The Atlantic Treaty, yes, right. Exactly.
So, but yeah, you're right. It's tragic, and again, it was a political war. Started because Serbia wanted its independence from the Austria-Hungarian kingdom at that time. And then because of all of these various interlocking military treaties, one nation after another just sort of piled in. Germany thought it was, they needed to deliver a quick knockout blow against the French otherwise, so they could turn around and then defend themselves against Russia. Didn't quite happen that way. They got bogged down by the Belgians, and suddenly you've just got this stalemate. Anyway, I'm not going to do it justice.
How long we've been going, because Sam just got up.
We got 5 minutes yet, Sam.
Sam, you're early.
Yeah. He hasn't had his coffee yet, though.
He's been patiently waiting for me to finish mine.
Yeah. Well, a couple of other things I just wanted to mention real quick, especially regards the topic of America and exceptionalism. We look at the Supreme Court as the supreme law of the land. That's the final say on matters of law in the United States.
Yeah, it's written in stone now.
And well, not so much. Oh. Actually, it's more like written on a white erase board. It's been revealed, this is the New York Times, that the Supreme Court actually goes back and revises its decisions years after they're issued. And they do it without any public notice. Now, according to this story, this has been going on for years. Apparently, the Chief Justice, Roger Taney, who was the Chief Justice during the Dred Scott opinion back in the 1850s, added like 18 pages to his decision after it was issued. But the court has been doing this for a long time. It's just that they do it and they don't tell anybody that they do it, so that you have to go back and compare the latest versions of the court's rulings with earlier published versions to see where the changes are made. Quoting from the article, the secretive editing process has led judges and law professors astray, causing them to rely on passages that were later scrubbed from the official record. The widening public access to online versions of the court's decisions, some of which do not reflect the final wording, has made the longstanding problem more pronounced. Now, these changes have not reversed decisions outright, but they've withdrawn conclusions on significant points of law, according to the article. And the larger point, according to Jeffrey L. Fisher, law professor at Stanford, is that Supreme Court decisions are very carefully analyzed by other judges and by scholars.
Every word is parsed.
Yes, every single word. And when they change the wording, they are changing law. They are rewriting law because their decisions are used as basis for adjudicating other cases in lower courts. In some cases, and very often, it is case law rather than the written law that will determine how judges rule.
Yes, case law trumps.
Yeah. And so apparently this has been going on for a long time. And really, the American public hasn't been aware of this at all until finally, just within the last week, a law professor and a group of his colleagues released a study into this phenomenon.
Whistleblowers.
Yeah, Supreme Court. So final law of the land. Yeah, but we reserve the right to change it so we don't look, you know, stupid later.
So, you know, that Constitution that we've got in that glass case in Washington.
Bow down. Worship it. But we reserve the right to change any part of it we feel necessary.
Exactly. One day, this revisionist history is going to hit the internet in a way that our children and our children's children will not know the same history that you and I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. HARP. HARP is being shut down this summer.
Aww.
That is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program.
Yeah. Is it being dismantled? Because if it's anything like the silos in North Dakota, that whole region that are being emptied but kept active?
Don't know. Let's see here. The official objectives of HARP are to identify, investigate, and if feasible, serve to enhance future DOD command, control, and communications capabilities. But of course, others believe that it's actually used to touch off killer hurricanes. Well, so much for the ultimate weapon of the conspiracy.
Well,
is it going to be defunded this summer? And there was one other thing I wanted to mention. Interesting bit of news. Richard Dawkins, sort of the leading prophet of new atheism, has described himself in an interview as a secular Christian.
What?
Yeah. And I think some folks, well-meaning Christians, have kind of seized on that as really good news, and I'm not sure that it really changes anything about his official position.
No, I don't think so either. I have seen people within the transhuman segment of society, those who believe that we should be more than we are, more than human, use similar spiritual adjectives to describe themselves, and yet what's interesting is they don't generally use the word Christian, but they'll talk about Jesus and how he sort of led the way for transfiguring humanity. Mm-hmm. In fact, transhumanism and transfiguration are becoming synonymous.
Yeah, and they're trying to adopt Christianese in order to make it more palatable to Christians
because they recognize
that.
So beware, be discerning.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, we've got plenty of secular Christians already in the pews, folks. We don't need another one. Dawkins really isn't changing. He just likes the ceremony. He likes the robes and the pomp.
Well, that's what I've seen, too, from others who talk about it, that they think that the churches are beautiful, the mosques are beautiful, the synagogues, the design, the architecture, the ceremony. Oh, there goes a plane.
Interesting. Well, we've reached an hour. I don't know if we want to talk about the transhumanist wager now, or we can hold off.
No, we'll hold off and talk, because that's a long discussion.
It is. It is. So, well, check out the new website, riseofthecybergods.com. And until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming, by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon, to get us out of here.